B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Tuesday, October 8th, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're gonna check out a brand new segment called Retro Refresh and bring fans of Final Fantasy into the modern era. Plus, we're gonna check in with our social media followers and find out what the spookiest game you've ever played is. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first,
gaming news update with Joe Sloan.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
Call of Duty Mobile is having an incredible run since releasing. It's now at over 100 million downloads worldwide.
PogChamp.
The game reached 35 million downloads just 2 days after release and has now cleared 100 million in a week, shattering records.
That's pretty impressive. I haven't checked it out myself, but now, I mean, 100 million downloads, can't be wrong.
Nah,
so.
I've been playing it quite a bit myself.
The mobile or the beta?
The mobile.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest, it's pretty intuitive. Is a lot better than what I thought it was supposed to be.
So are we talking like multiplayer deathmatch? Are we talking,
full multiplayer.
Wow.
Okay, so like, is it like control-wise kind of like what you get with like PUBG Mobile, that sort of thing?
In a way, but you know, it's even more tightly controlled than that. It is one of the best controlling mobile games I've ever played.
Interesting.
That's impressive. While many people have been clamoring for Grand Theft Auto 6, Bully 2 is another title that people have long been asking for out of Rockstar. Recent reports say that the game was actually in development earlier this decade, and there was actually a playable build of the game floating around the Rockstar offices. However, they couldn't figure out what to do with the story, and so after 18 months of development, the game fizzled out into obscurity.
This is so disappointing, because the first Bully game was an excellent game.
It was really good.
And I think, you know, like, now in 2019, with bullying being such a hot top talking point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how could you not figure out a story for this game?
That also seems like a really weird reason to just let it completely fizzle away. If someone can't figure out a story, hire someone to figure that out.
I mean, I'd be inclined to agree with that. And also, how hard is it to just write a school story?
Like, I know, right?
It's not like Bully's story was incredibly mind-blowing. It basically was Matilda with a bunch of other things mixed in.
It kind of was. Wait, you're not wrong.
That's all it was. So how hard could it have been to write a story to just create a setting? I don't get it.
This really concerns me, because I think this is even more evidence of Rockstar being gun shy in this new era of comedy and our culture, and not being able to do the same sort of edgy material, or feeling like they can't do the same sort of edgy material that they're known for. I have a lot of concerns for Grand Theft Auto 6. Sure.
Yeah, I really hope that they're not getting to that point where they've had so much success that they're afraid to lose what they have, and like, you can't work that way.
Listen, you gotta be South Park. You gotta muddle through it. You're gonna have, you know, games that suck, just like they have seasons that suck. Yes. So, you know, like, but you gotta try. You can't just let games fizzle out or die on the vine like this. That's unacceptable.
A new program called Brainy Act is using video games to help kids with autism, ADHD, and dyslexia. It's using games to work with kids on everything from rhythm, balance, directionality, and timing, all the way up to more high-functioning skills like problem-solving and reasoning. The program is seeing success so far, and as it finishes its first year, is looking to expand into Alzheimer's and dementia patients.
Wow. Awesome.
This
Absolutely
is amazing.
Awesome. You know, again, we talk about games and what they can do to benefit the community. We see this with speed running and Extra Life and all this sort of stuff where people are really trying to do as much as they can from the gaming community, and it's good to see a game and a development team do something like this.
Absolutely. You need stories like this out there, counterbalancing all of these ideas that, you know, oh, Fortnite is as addictive as cocaine. You
right.
know, like, that kind of stuff is, I think, you know, hogwash to the extreme. But, you know, having stories out there like this, I think, really does shine a spotlight on all of the good things that video games do for us.
Fans of Doom Eternal, we're sorry to say you'll have to wait a little bit longer to play.
Aww.
Id Software and Bethesda have announced the game will need some more time for polish, and it will be delayed until March 2020.
Oh, no.
That'll put it in a release window alongside major titles like Final Fantasy VII Remake and Cyberpunk.
They
should have just put out the broke game.
Yeah. Listen, it wouldn't be the first time Bethesda has done that.
Just put out the broke game and patch it as it goes along, because I'm sorry, you are going to be destroyed in this window.
Yeah, you're
going
to get destroyed. They were damned if they do and damned if they don't. They couldn't put it out at its original window. It was November 22nd, so now they're going to have a broke game up against Death Stranding and Pokemon? Nope.
Yeah.
You can't do that either.
Yeah, but it's not FF and Cyberpunk. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'd rather put out the completed game. We're still coming up on a release date for Death Stranding, which is scheduled to drop on November the 8th. In a recent interview with Kojima, he was asked how long it would take to beat the game. In his usual cryptic fashion, he said it will take a lot of time to complete.
Did I just blow your mind?
He did mention that the game will seem like a short game at first glance, but will take a long time to complete.
Listen, you either go finish the game or you ain't gonna finish the game.
Here's the thing. I mean, like, I honestly believe that there is some larger ideas that were at play in Metal Gear Solid 5 that never got to see completion.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder if there's going to be a multiplayer online element that's going to take a long time to suss out, in the same way that, like,
making connections, man,
base building and nuke defending and all of that kind of stuff did in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Well, here's the thing, is we've heard now that the actions that one player does might undo the actions of another player, and we also know that this game is more about establishing these connections.
I already love this game.
If to actually clear it, you're going to have to kind of work in tandem with people, whether you're realizing you're doing it or not, to actually get somewhere.
Kojima is a master of this kind of stuff, and I can't wait to find out.
Even fans of wrestling may not know who Leroy Green is. He's a performer for House of Glory, and he's going viral now as one of his new special maneuvers sees him sit down in the middle of the ring and start playing on his Switch to confuse his opponents.
Get out of here, wrestling!
Nope, this is real. I watched his moment where he's doing this, and he literally, like, holds up the finger, sits down, starts playing on his Switch, and when the other guy gets mad and tries to kick him, he does the schoolboy pin on him.
This is really stupid. I mean, this is a really dumb gimmick. It's hilarious. Don't get me wrong, it's hilarious, but I don't know. I don't know that you're going to get over the Switch in the middle of the ring.
Just to paint a picture, he actually gets Hurricane Rana'd, rolls out of it, and immediately goes sitting down, you know, cross-leg style to playing his Switch. It is the best counter to a Hurricane Run I've ever seen.
Listen, unless Nintendo is sponsoring this and sending him Switches, I foresee some really bad news in the future.
Some big expense on his part. That's all for the Checkpoint XP gaming news update. For more, head on over to our website. That's checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Joe, for the update. One of the biggest developments in gaming this week has been the official announcement of the PlayStation 5. Before this week, we didn't even know what the system would be called. I mean,
it would be called the PlayStation 5.
We could assume that it would be the PlayStation 5, but what if they'd made a Microsoft-like decision and decided to call it the Station of Play? I don't know.
The PlayStation Virgo.
Or something, yeah.
Dumb.
We did get confirmed, though, that yes, it is indeed the PlayStation 5.
Yeah, so we did get a little bit of information to go off of here. We do now know for sure that it'll be releasing holiday season 2020, which again isn't, I don't think, very
not
surprising to anyone in the room.
Start saving up.
We don't now that is a bigger window than we talked about, because it's somewhere between October and December or in January. So
sure,
that is a pretty big release window. Mm-hmm. I would love if they had the guts to do an October release on this thing.
You think?
If they had,
I mean,
the
they've
guts.
Done it before. PS2 didn't come out in holiday season. It came out the fall beforehand. So, I mean, it's not unheard of.
Well, right on the back of this announcement, a slew of games have now suddenly come forward and revealed they will be having a PS5 version, confirming our suspicion that everyone was just kind of waiting for the official announcement before they could announce it. Things like FF7 Remake and Rainbow Six Siege have both announced that there will be a PS5 version of their games.
Sure.
We also got an idea about their controller.
I did see this, which is really interesting. It is supposed to have haptic feedback, but it also is supposed to be modular.
Yeah, well, a couple things about this, right? So not only is it going to have haptic feedback, which for those who don't know, this is kind of like if you're walking through sludge or sand, the joysticks feel like they're sluggish. They don't work
resistance
quite the same.
They'll be resistant.
Exactly. And some early testers have said that they got to play a game on it where they were both walking on ice, walking in sand, and it does work. It is functional.
Very cool.
The other thing that they've talked about is being able to have triggers that the programmers are going to be able to set the resistance on. So if you're doing something like trying to pull back a bow, you could, by how hard it is to pull back, you can pull the arrow back further.
Very interesting.
Just as an example, they can basically program how much resistance the triggers give you.
See, that's so brilliant, man. And we talk about, you know, what's the next level of gaming. And I like, you know, sort of a rethinking of the human machine interface, if you will, as to, you know, making it just a little bit that much more immersive.
There are always ways to improve on a way that a game controls. Mm-hmm. But I have a critical question before we have to wrap up this segment. Why couldn't they have made this announcement at the last state of play, or at any state of play, or at, I don't know, an E3, or somewhere that has a little bit more fanfare than me having to read it from a tweet from Digital Trends?
The only reason that I think that they had done this is they had actually, this announcement came out when Sony did an interview with Wired. Mm-hmm. And the reason they did that interview was because they had just sent out these controllers and they wanted to get ahead of it and make the announcement instead of having it all be leaked instead.
This is a really, I think, really stupid look in terms of raising the profile of your system and, you know, marketing it. But, you know, whatever. That's just me. We want to hear from you. Are you excited about the PlayStation 5 announcement? We have a really great think piece on our website about, are consoles even necessary? Make sure you go check it out on CheckpointXP.com. Also, connect with us on social media. That's CheckpointXP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to get the latest in esports news. Plus, we've got to check out a brand new segment that we've got called Retro Refresh. We're going to be bringing anyone who have played Final Fantasy games up to current. What's going on currently in the Final Fantasy universe? Plus, we're going to check in with our social media followers and find out what the spookiest game you've ever played is. Those conversations are still ahead here. A big day here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we have to talk about this situation that's going on with Blizzard suspending a player over comments about Hong Kong. Stick around. That conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Blizzard suspends a Hearthstone player for statements supporting the protests in Hong Kong. It's pretty serious. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on WCTC 1450 in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and WLEA 1480 in Hornell, New York. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got a ton of new emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one but two cat emotes. Dolly and Fritz, our actual cats, are now Twitch emotes. There's only one place to get them. It's over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. There's a lot of discussion going on about Hong Kong and the current protests that are going on there, and it's starting to have an impact here in America and all over the place, and esports is no exception. Joe, what can you tell us about this?
All right, so basically a player by the name of Blitz Chung, a pro Hearthstone player from Hong Kong, ended a stream earlier this week with a statement of support for those engaged in the months-long protests against local police and government. As a result of that, Blizzard ruled that he violated competition rules and have handed down a heavy punishment. He has been suspended for a year and his prize pool or his prize winnings reduced reduced to zero and may face additional penalties from Blizzard, still not announced. He's also been removed from Grandmasters.
Now, let me understand something. This was on his stream.
No, this was actually, I believe, after winning a Grandmasters tournament, because the VOD that he said it in was deleted and removed as well.
Interesting.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this, of course, happens just recently. We've also got an issue going on right now with the NBA. Mm-hmm. They are in utter chaos right now over something that a member of the Houston Rockets organization said, I believe
yes.
it
yes.
is, also in support of the protests in Hong Kong. And now China is basically threatening to pull funding out of the NBA at a time when the NBA is currently in China doing a big promotional event over there.
Yeah, it's definitely some very, very complicated waters. This, I think, really just brings forward the issue of doing so much business in China.
It does, yeah.
Because, you know, like, the government is obviously going to have a position on this, mm-hmm. but having consequences extend to private United States citizens is getting into some really
murky waters.
Really murky waters.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I think the question that this forces me to ask is, are esports athletes, because of the international nature of what esports is, are esports athletes allowed to take a stand on issues like this without endangering the money?
Well, and I think the big thing here is to always, you know, sort of temper what's going on here, because everybody, of course, will tout freedom of speech, and that's fine, but freedom of speech does not extend beyond United States borders. It doesn't necessarily mean that you could go to someone else's country and say what you want to say.
Correct.
If that particular statute is not, you know,
there.
Doesn't exist there. It is a very American concept that for some people, they think it is vital to their personal democracies, personal rights, whatever, but that's not a human law. That is not something that extends to every country in this world. So that's caveat number one. But I think the question of, you know, do esports athletes stand up and say what they feel they should be saying, I think you also have to be very aware of where you are,
the platform that you're on.
The platform you're on and with whom you are talking to.
And who you're doing business with.
And who you're doing business with. Because I draw parallels to the Colin Kaepernick thing, right?
Because this is not something new. This is something we've been seeing in traditional sports now for the better part of a decade. It feels like longer than that, to be honest with you. But especially within the last couple of years with people taking a knee and all that stuff.
And to your point about the NBA, the NBA is an organization that is kind of known for many of its players or organizations' stances on social issues. You know, there isn't really a whole lot of stemming of the tide when it comes to reining people in on what they say about any number of issues.
Right. For the better part of now 20 years, the NBA has been leaning into this personality-driven model, basically, for their league.
Exactly. And I think that now it's clashing with some very real money. And, you know, this is definitely interesting to watch unfold. But we got to bring it back to esports. We got to bring it back to our own backyard. And I like the parallels, Norris, that you're drawing to Colin Kaepernick, where, you know, it feels like anyone who is outspoken on any number of different social issues will have some sort of price to pay, either whether it's within their organization, whether it's within the league that they play in, or whether it's just on social media with people coming out of the woodwork and either disagreeing with their take or taking it to the next level and threatening them as individuals.
And here's the thing is that, you know, I can support, you know, people speaking out and, you know, supporting whatever causes that they want to support. But the fact of the matter is that when you're talking about a private company, they can do what they want.
That's right.
Especially if you sign a contract. And if Blizzard has said that this has gone against whatever contract they had him sign, then legally, he's kind of you out of there.
The competition rule that they state says engaging in any act that, in Blizzard's sole discretion, brings you into public disrepute, offends a portion or group of the public, or otherwise damages Blizzard's image will result in removal from Grandmaster and reduction of the player's prize.
Now, I can feel how I feel about that privately.
Yep.
But as an adult who has signed contracts with a company, there are certain things that even within this show, if I say I will violate my contract and I am subject to termination,
no matter how sucky it may be,
and I hate that that's a thing, but you are not free or exonerated of those consequences. And that's in America, okay? So for as much as I can support one thing, you also got to be very well aware of the consequences. And I hate that that's a reality personally, but it is a reality. And I think it behooves esports professionals to understand that doubly so because of the international nature of their space.
You're absolutely right. And we do know that Tencent owns a portion of Blizzard and is responsible for 100% of their distribution in China. And we also know that Tencent also is very in line with the Chinese government. So you do have internal forces that are probably driving some pressure either way. I will say this. I do think that Blizzard made a big misstep by taking this dude out for a year and rescinding his money.
They also ceased contracts with the two casters who were present during that interview.
This is strong arming on a level that I am profoundly uncomfortable with, whether it's inside esports, whether it's inside media, or whether it's inside the NBA. I am profoundly uncomfortable with China having as much say in what players can say on their own private time, on their own private channel, or even as a part of a winning interview. That bothers me on a very profound level.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you, Nate. As much as I, Norris, understand what you're saying, there is an element of understanding your space and understanding what you need to say and being willing to accept the consequences for it. I think there's also an element of get a grip.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, people are going to say what they're going to say. Not everything isn't a personal affront.
And to be fair, we do not know whether or not this player knew whether there would be consequences for what he said. He may have said this on purpose, knowing full well that this could have been the consequence, making the point anyway. And you know what? My hat goes off to you, but we want to hear from you. Where do you land on this issue? Did Blizzard overstep their boundaries by suspending this guy for a year? Or are you with Blizzard? It's Chung. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to check in with our social media followers to find out what the spookiest game you've ever played is. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we're going to check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint XP News Desk.
Overwatch League second season is in the books, and boy, have things gotten crazy.
Esports news is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
The latest esports news is here on Checkpoint XP. Welcome back. I want to thank everyone listening on 107.7 The Franchise in Oklahoma City, as well as 107.9 The Franchise in Tulsa. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to check out a brand new segment called Retro Refresh and get you guys all caught up in the Final Fantasy franchise. Plus, we're going to check in with our social media followers and find out what the spookiest game you've ever played is. Those conversations are still ahead here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's get the latest in esports news.
Oh my God! It's over! It's over! He did it!
Ready for the dunk!
Oh, and another one! Oh, the third! What is this?
Esports Gaming Update with Joe Sloan.
With the second season of Overwatch League in the books, things are in a state of upheaval.
Yeah.
Players and coaches are being released and signed all over the league, and it's gotten so hectic that Blizzard actually released a tracker to help fans follow who ends up
where. Yes, put the camera on me. Roster madness!
It is roster.
It's here, baby!
It is roster madness, which is kind of cool. I actually like the way that things shake up in between seasons for Overwatch. This seems like a lot, though.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be the biggest shakeup yet, because previously it was, you know, trades that were happening.
Right.
And your big stars like Ryu Jaehong or Sure4, Jonak, you would never see teams give them up. But now that some of those are in free agency, it's on them.
Who's taking their talents to South Beach? That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's going to happen, guys. It's here.
Here's the thing. Here's my question. Is the success of the Runaways, a.k.a. Vancouver Titans, does that give bringing talent up from contenders a lot more validity? Do you think that that's at least more in the calculation of some of these teams this
year? I think it could if contenders wasn't, unfortunately, so poorly ran. If contenders Korea is by far the best out of all of them.
Sure.
And if that was the same for all of the division of contenders, then I think you can make a statement that way. But I just don't see it. I don't see the whole of Team Gigante or Eagle Gaming or something like that ending up in the Overwatch League and being a competitive team.
I'm not talking full squads. I'm just talking giving more validity to the talent that exists in contenders, because I feel like season one, outside of Runaways, contenders talent was a little bit of a write-off.
Yeah, I mean, you mean season two.
No, I meant season one.
I mean,
season one.
And you've seen a few people kind of bounce back and forth, too. Fiction, who found a place on Los Angeles Valiant this past year, you know, he had been put down into Florida's Academy, a team, after the Outlaws let him go. And then the home that he found in the Valiant, I think he's made a very good fit there.
While there are many esports athletes out there making a living doing what they love, it's worth remembering that not every game out there provides the same opportunities. Take Zero, a famous Smash Brothers for Wii U competitor. Despite winning 56 tournaments in his career, his lifetime earnings for the game sits at around $45,000.
Yikes.
It highlights the need for further investment into the FGC.
Yeah.
Or Norris, I kind of want to get your thoughts on the fighting game community.
We just need money.
That's pretty much it. I mean, without a doubt. But also, I want to put a caveat on this, is the fact that any Smash game is going to have a much lower prize pool than even other FGC games, considering Nintendo never gave it official support up until Smash Ultimate.
Oh,
so when you have stuff like the Capcom Pro Tour, now the Tekken World Tour, and a lot more sponsorship going towards those games, you're going to have a lot more opportunity to make money. Somebody like Sonic Fox has made well over six figures, well over 100K, over really a fraction of the career of somebody like Zero with playing, you know, NetherRealm game.
I really don't mean to kind of go after Zero or anything like that, but I mean, maybe he picked the wrong game to be competitive in.
No, go after him, Zero. You need to move up. If you want money, get on that farming simulator train.
I'm just saying, like, less people even bought the Wii U than, you know, I don't know.
But
I can't
think
of a good analogy. It was a poorly performing system. The game was probably received the worst outside of Brawl.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's tough.
The situation between Rick Fox and his team Echo Fox just continues to deteriorate.
Oh boy.
I know. Last week we learned that Echo Fox was looking to remove their founder, alleging that Rick was no longer acting in the best interest of the company. Now Rick Fox is suing the organization and his partners, alleging rampant fraud within the company.
Wow. You won't get rid of me that easily.
Given the ongoing state of chaos, it's no surprise that players are beginning to leave the team to seek opportunities elsewhere.
Yeah.
That one, I forgot you had that one. It caught me off guard.
That is not surprising in the least. This legal battle is going to be a knockout, drag out slobber knocker. It is going to be an epic legal battle.
In my personal opinion, there's no way Echo Fox survives this legal battle. The organization is done.
Yeah.
Parody in CSGO seems to be on the rise. Last week, all of the Counter-Strike world was talking about Evil Geniuses. That was deservedly so after they stormed onto the scene and beat Astralis at ESL1 New York, shocking everyone. However, it was a difficult week at DreamHack Malmo for many of the world's favorites. Evil Geniuses got bounced early, along with another North American powerhouse in Team Liquid.
Wow.
Astralis was also knocked out, leaving a surprising finals between Vitality and Fnatic.
Not two names that I didn't expect to see in the finals.
No, not that hardly anyone expected to see in the finals, I wouldn't
Fair
think.
Enough.
But, I mean, it's a good good sign, I think, for that scene to see a lot more parody starting
well,
to show
and
up.
Especially moving forward into a more sort of regimented, structured season model in 2020. I think this is a good sign people are going to be able to find and follow more teams and become fans.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Esports Gaming Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Joe, for the update. The Super Bowl of Esports is quickly approaching. The group stages of League of Legends World Championships begin this weekend, and it's time to check in to see if North America has any chance at all.
All right, so let's break this down, because we have, I think, the most competitive group stage of Worlds since I've watched League of Legends ever, in my opinion. And Nate, I want to thank you. It is. It really is kind of the Super Bowl of esports.
It is
the largest, probably most prestigious tournament in the world this year. You can argue the international. It's one of those two, probably. Yeah. But for the purpose of this, we're going to say it's this one. So basically the way this is going to work, there's 16 teams remaining right now. They're going to be broken into four groups. And basically the top two out of each of those groups get to advance. There'll be a bracket of eight, the eight remaining. And then whoever's the last team standing is the winner. So I guess to the question of, does North America have a chance?
This is the best chance they've ever had, ever.
And I guess it depends on what do you mean by, do they have a chance? Do you mean Final Four? Do you mean making it to finals? Or do you mean winning it?
Well, listen, it's always about winning it.
This is America, okay? If you make first, you're last.
Exactly. Yes, right? Thank you, Norris.
Winning or bust, okay?
Thank you.
The best time for North America to win at Worlds through Team Liquid. Team Liquid has been utterly dominant throughout this season, and this is the best they've ever looked, in my opinion.
Please explain why North America has a shot.
All right, so Norris, I think, gave a really good start there. It's because we Team Liquid is probably that particular squad that we have is the best team the North American region has ever managed to put together. They are really good. They went all the way to the finals of the Midseason Invitational, which is the other major international tournament for the year. If they can repeat that performance, they could well wind up in the finals again. So I thought what we should do is we should look through the group stages and we'll see who we think is going to come out of each one and see if North America's got a shot.
It's true. And here's the thing. The last thing about Team Liquid I'll say is that part of what makes them so good is, I'd say, four out of their five positions, they probably have the best player in North American history in those positions.
For sure. So Group A has got Cloud9, another North American team, G2 Esports, Griffin, and Hong Kong Attitude. Ooh. I think Group A is the hardest group to call of all four of them.
I'd be inclined to
agree. I think G2 is the only shoe-in to make it out.
G2 is, I think, a guaranteed exit, and then it's either Griffin or Cloud9.
Yeah, because in my opinion, G2 is the best team in the world right now.
Okay.
I think Cloud9 has a strong chance, but Griffin, the number two team coming out of Korea, is also very strong.
If I had to do a pick, I would say that it's going to be G2 Esports and Cloud9. I think Griffin is going to underperform a little bit, and I just don't see a lot out of Hong Kong Attitude. Mm. So Group B is the one that's maybe the least relevant to our North American listeners, so we'll get through it quickly. Fun Plus Phoenix, GAM Esports, J-Team, and Splice. My guess is going to be Fun Plus Phoenix and J-Team.
And J-Team, yeah.
I don't think the other two teams. Splice is a wild card because they're European and their home field advantage. They might do better than we're expecting. But I would guess Fun Plus Phoenix and J-Team. Group C.
The group of death.
Is the group of death. And when we say a group of death, we mean the one you just don't want to get drawn into.
Guess what?
Well, if you're a North American team.
If you're really anyone. It's got three of the best teams in the world in
Fair
it.
Fair enough, yeah.
Fnatic, Royal Never Give Up, and SK Telecom T1 are all in that group. And if you were a Clutch Gaming fan, well, it was fun to get this far. Clutch also got drawn into this group, and I just don't think they have any chance.
And just to add some extra context, Royal Never Give Up, one of the greatest franchises to ever come out of China. Fnatic got to the finals last year, surprising everyone, a very strong team. And SK Telecom T1,
the
winningest
team
in the history of League of Legends.
Yeah, and so Clutch Gaming, they make it through the play-in stages to get into Group C. I'll tell you what, if Clutch Gaming get out of Group C, it is the miracle on ice. It is the esports and miracle on ice if they make it out of Group C. Group D, meanwhile, we've got Team Liquid, Invictus Gaming, AHQ Esports Club, and Damwon Gaming. I like Team Liquid's chances to get out of here. I would have preferred to not see Damwon get drawn into that group because that throws a little bit of a wrench in my confidence, but I still feel like Team Liquid and Invictus are definitely the two teams that are going to get out of that group.
I'm going to throw a curveball in there, and I actually think Damwon and Team Liquid are who make it out. Invictus, even though
the defending world champions are going down,
even though I see, you know, Invictus as the defending champions, Team Liquid has beaten Invictus before. I think they can beat them twice again. And I think Dan Juan is a team that had no business being in the play-ins. They probably should have been seeded. They weren't. I think they're a lot better than people are giving them credit for. I think Invictus gets left back in groups.
So given the calculus of the group stages here, Team Liquid is still North America's best shot at Worlds.
I would say your best chance, if you're a North America fan, is to put on that Team Liquid jersey. Those matches get started 8 a.m. Eastern Time this weekend at twitch.tv/Riot.
All right. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to check in with our social media followers to find out what the spookiest game you've ever played is. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we've got a brand new segment called Retro Refresh to bring all you Final Fantasy fans up to date. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
It's time for a retro refresh. We're going to bring you up to speed on a game that you may have grown up playing. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Hawk 1340 in Wenatchee, Washington, as well as the Fan 97.1 in Columbus, Ohio. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the BPod Network at BPodStudios.com. For more great listening options like Inside the Ropes, a weekly look inside wrestling in the WWE, and Talking Rock with Meltdown, an interview and music news podcast, go to bpodstudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery. We've got a brand new segment here on Checkpoint XP, and it's called Retro Refresh. We're going to take a look at a game that you probably played growing up and bring you up to speed on what they're doing now.
Yep, so on Retro Refresh, we like to take a look at franchises from back in the 80s and 90s that are either still running today, or they've had a reboot, or
right,
they've been remade in some fashion.
Yes.
And kind of, you know, compare the old and the new. So we're starting today with a game series that is near and dear to our hearts, the Final Fantasy franchise.
That's right. So
the awkwardly named Final Fantasy.
So a little bit of history, and I know a lot of fans already know this, but the reason that the game is called Final Fantasy is at the time, Square, the publisher of the game,
yep,
thought that this could be their last game.
This was kind of their
this was their swan
the last
song.
Hurrah.
Yep. Yep. And it ended up being the game that ended up putting them on the map.
Yes, so Final Fantasy debuted in 1987 for the Nintendo. The most recent entry in the mainline franchise was Final Fantasy 15.
Wait, you mean they made 15 of these games?
No, they made way more.
If you want to count sequels and spinoffs, there are over 50 different titles.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
That's on the low end.
So the most recent in the mainline franchise was in 2016 with Final Fantasy 15, although the online game is still being updated, and there's been, as Robbie said, a billion and one other Final Fantasy games over the years. And I just kind of want to compare and contrast where we started from where we are now. Nate, I'm going to start by asking you a question.
Yeah, okay.
If a listener out there, let's say maybe they played Final Fantasy 1.
Sure.
And none of the others.
Yeah.
Would they recognize the series today?
Probably not. Here's the thing, is that at some point, the Final Fantasy franchise really embraced its anime-ness. And
yes.
And really like started to lean into that.
I would say they embraced it about the time the graphics would allow them to embrace
it. Yeah, I'd say that that's fair, but there was also a really tonal shift in anime May around that same time.
There was.
So I think they just kind of followed where they thought they should
be. It went super shonen.
But here's the thing, is that, like, if you played the original Final Fantasy from 1987,
yeah.
What you're used to is a very, like, kind of fantastic...
High fantasy
environment where you're fighting trolls and goblins and...
Don't forget your
wizards.
Wizards. There's a dark knight who steals a princess, and it's very, you know, it's just, you've got the veneer of high fantasy.
Right.
And the thing about the Final Fantasy franchise is that no two games really kind of connect in any, like, logical way.
They're all
set in very separate worlds from one another, so you don't need to play any of the other games to really be able to appreciate what you're playing. But in terms of, you know, what you're doing or the settings that you may find your characters in, it varies wildly from game to game. Now, I don't think as many of our listeners out there would have had a window into the franchise with the very first.
I don't either.
I think way more of our listeners would have context for 7.
6 and 7.
7 was a cultural phenomenon that really brought the RPG to the mainstream here in the U.S.
So for those who don't know, Final Fantasy 7, we're talking late 90s
1997.
Now. Yep, mm-hmm. PlayStation 1 era. First Final Fantasy game to be brought to the disc.
So good news! If Final Fantasy VII was your first Final Fantasy, or even the only Final Fantasy that you've ever played, you're in luck. That same game is being remade and will release in March of 2020.
Yeah. So yeah. Not just rebooted or upscaled or remastered. They remade that from the ground up.
That's absolutely right.
Yep. So if you know the adventures of Cloud and Tifa and Aerith,
Avalanche.
Yes, absolutely. You will be able to re-experience that in a completely redone setting, brand new battle mechanics. I mean, one of the things that really stands out about the Final Fantasy franchise is how long the system has relied on what's called a turn-based battle system, where you're inputting commands and then a series of actions ends up happening. And at some point, the battle system around Final Fantasy 13 and 12-ish
in that area
started to change to a much more kind of action-oriented battle mm-hmm. system. So if you're familiar with games that, you know, put you a little bit more in the driver's seat in terms of the action that's going on screen, that is a little bit more akin to what the modern Final Fantasy games are like.
That is true. But there's not to say that the old turn-based model, you know, where you pick action, then your enemy does something, then you pick action and vice versa. That's not to say that system doesn't have its place within the series.
Well, even the Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to include a classic battle system.
That's right. And up until those 12 and 13 and 14 and and 15 now, you had a lot of those games that were still turn-based. So
yes.
If you want to catch up, or if you want to experience a lot of the ones in between that are a little bit more familiar, you're still going to be able to do that with Final Fantasy VIII now that's been re-released on the Switch.
I mean, they've all been re-released.
They've all been re-released on Steam,
PlayStation,
on the Switch. But there's a remaster of 8 now that has just come out this year that people have been really excited about and happy that it's out.
Let me ask, for those, you know, maybe listening who played these games in the 90s or earlier than that even, would you say the franchise is better today than it was then?
That's hard to quantify. It's really difficult to quantify because I think that the game series has changed and therefore may not be aimed towards someone like me anymore.
I'll say this. The people who are getting their start with the series in 13 or 15 love and enjoy those games.
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Those of us who went through the 90s era, though.
The golden age. Yes, we have definitely regressed back into the bronze age.
No, I'm going to go. I'm going to just flat out say this. No, they're not as good as they used to be. Flat out. Not just from a you know, from a technical standpoint, yes, they look better, but the gameplay is nowhere near as satisfying, in my opinion.
But what makes a Final Fantasy game a Final Fantasy game?
The story!
It's more the existence of chocobos, moogles, and other common kind of characters
in it. Well, based on that, they're just as good.
But you're right. The story is always at the center of every Final Fantasy game, and what you are guaranteed to get, no matter what the Final Fantasy game we're talking about, is a sweeping, overarching narrative that is going to tell you a very big story. That's the thing about Final Fantasy. The scope of the game is always huge and almost overwhelming, and that stays consistent no matter which entry in the title you're talking about. But listen, we want to hear from you. Whether you're a Final Fantasy fan or not, we want to know. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Let us know which one of the Final Fantasy games is your favorite. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to check in with our social media followers and find out what the spookiest game you've ever played is. It's October, and you know that this question was coming. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
It's Checkpoint XP's social media question. Welcome back. I want to thank everyone listening on 92.5 FM Fox News in Jacksonville and ESPN Southwest Florida 99.3 FM. Check out our website over at CheckpointXP.com. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for the Checkpoint XP Nation newsletter. Get behind-the-scenes insight, photos, and access to contests and unique content. All it takes is an email address and a zip code. So sign up today at CheckpointXP.com. You can also follow us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram, so that you can respond to our weekly social media question. This week, we were asking you what the spookiest game you've ever played is. Of course, getting ready for Halloween. We got a lot of really great responses, and a lot of responses that I wasn't expecting, because they're not even in the horror genre.
No, they're just creepy parts of games.
Yeah.
Good answers.
I have to admire that, but we're going to go around the room before we get to your responses. I'm going to start with Robbie. Robbie, what's the spookiest game you've ever played?
So I'm not big into horror games in general. I've obviously played a few in my time, but in most recent memory, also not a game that I would classify as horror.
Sure.
But between the aesthetics and the way that they used music and sound, I'm actually going to say Control.
Especially
because of the setting, office building setting that they put it in. When you would walk into a room and nothing's happening because of the perfect symmetry and how everything just looks pristine, always set me so on edge.
You're like freaked out because you're like something in here.
Yeah, I felt way more comfortable after a battle when everything was destroyed than I would walking into a room not knowing what was going to happen.
And of course, this is a studio most known for Alan Wake, another game that was very much rooted in shows like Twin Peaks and the X-Files. So they have very much that ability to create an atmospheric environment. Norris, what about you? What's the spookiest game you've ever
easily
played?
Easily Silent Hill 2.
Oh, good answer.
Easily. It is one of the few games that I have actively had nightmares about.
Okay.
Chester Fox in the chat says he gives the same answer and says, I proceeded to return it the very same day I bought
it. Yeah, like to hear the scrape of Pyramid Head's giant knife as he's like, you know, stalking around, half the time not even paying attention to you, just menacing you.
Just when you're descending into the town and you can hear like the air raid siren. sirens going off and stuff like that. No, it sets a good environment early on. That game's creepy.
Absolutely. Joe, what about you? What's the spookiest game you've ever played?
You know, for me, it goes back to like when I played it, because a lot of the games like I've played that are horror games now, they're creepy, but they don't make me feel the way I did when I was a kid.
Sure.
However, when I was younger and I played Eternal Darkness for the first time.
Good answer.
Eternal Darkness, a game designed to mess with you.
Yes.
Just, you'd have, you know, babies crying. It would mess with the graphics on your screen.
Wouldn't it like delete your file?
At one point, it tells you that it's deleted not just your save file, but the entire memory card.
Yep. It's literally designed to make you think the game is haunted.
It's basically,
it's creepy.
It's basically the Psycho Mantis fight from MGS 1.
Yes.
Just spread out of the whole game.
Pretty much.
Great answer. Love that answer. For me, something a little bit more recent. I played this in college and I played it with roommates and it freaked both of us out.
Ooh.
Dead Space.
Oh, very good.
Oh, yeah.
Dead Space.
Very good.
The over-the-top violence in Dead Space, it will never sit right with
you. Body horror.
It is absolute body horror from one end to the other. Two of the games are phenomenal. Really enjoyed that series.
And in a better way than games like Doom do it. Like,
yes.
Doom does it for an action idea, whereas Dead Space did it for horror and really made it work.
And really did. Yeah, it worked to that game's advantage. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're currently going through our social media question, asking you guys this week what the spookiest game you've ever played is. Now let's take a look at the responses that were coming in over social media.
So Rob on Facebook says, I was watching a buddy play the first Arkham Asylum. There's a scene where Scarecrow gasses you and you hallucinate a world where he's a giant and you have to sneak by him.
Yes.
My buddy gets to the end, he's super focused, and at the last second, Scarecrow turns around and there was a rather loud sting effect when he spots you. My friend goes, oh, damn, and just throws the controller at the TV in self-defense. Nothing got broken, but many laughs were had. That got me thinking.
That's a great sequence, though, by the way.
It is. Arkham Asylum, at the moment when I was told I had to go down to Killer Croc Slayer I literally remember going, but I don't want to. I don't want to go down to Killer Croc Slayer. That's going to be awful.
Speaking of water, I want to grab one that didn't make it to the list when we were doing it, but Sarascopic on Twitter says, I don't care if you judge me for it, and we will, but I played Nancy Drew Water at Shadow's Edge as a grown woman, and it definitely scared me.
Really?
Come on.
All right, Sarah. Thank you. Blake over on Facebook says Resident Evil for the GameCube.
All right, I'll give you that.
That's a good one.
Well, we've also got Robin on Facebook saying the Genova blood trail when you're breaking out of Shinra's jail in FF7 really spooked me as a kid as well. And also that music. Yeah, I love this answer because that's not a horror game
But
like
it's a spooky moment.
It is a very unnerving moment. Yeah,
actually,
absolutely.
FF7 had a few very unnerving, spooky moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got Joe on Facebook who says, Resident Evil 2 on the N64 back in 2000 when I was 13. Played it by myself in the basement at night with the lights off. That was a mistake.
I remember watching a neighbor of mine play through Resident Evil 2, and there was no way that I was taking the sticks from him. No way. That's all you. You got this, buddy. You go. I'm going to be cheering you on back here.
Jeffrey on Facebook says the one that I was torn between with Eternal Darkness, the original Fatal Frame on PS2.
Ooh.
Both Fatal Frame.
That's a bit of a deep cut. Yeah,
Fatal Frame 1 and 2, a game where you use a camera to spot ghosts in a spooky village.
Yeah,
it was creepy.
A game that a lot of people wrote off because of the quote unquote lack of action in it. So
Was ridiculous. I love that game.
Another one that I want to make sure that we hit on too. Mike from Facebook says PT or Silent Hills. Even though it technically never came out, the unnerving feeling of not knowing what was going to be in the next loop was the creepiest part.
Absolutely.
There's been so many recent things that have came out about that. People like digging into it and whatnot.
Yeah.
For example, the creepy lady that's in it actually follows you around.
The entire time.
She's always right there behind you.
Yep.
But you can never see her.
Yeah, the character model always exists behind you in a constant state of, you know, like how the game will render stuff in front of you.
Right.
Well, if it renders behind you as well, if you take off the radial rendering, she's always there.
Oh, I don't like that. Oh, that creeps me out. Wesley says, Fear. I made the mistake of playing this game in the dark. I had forgotten about Fear.
Oh, my God. Yep. Fear.
That was a popular...
That was one. I played that on purpose to freak myself out with the headphones on late at night. That was my late at night game, and that game was my jam.
Yeah, I played that game a lot at LAN parties. That was a popular shooter for
LAN
parties.
They had the mechanic where you could slow down time in that, and I love that game so much.
Karen on Facebook says, BioShock, which was my first real dark shooter. The atmosphere and atmospheric sounds put me on edge the entire time. When a splicer was suddenly next to me, I screamed and missed like all my shots. BioShock 1 had some creepiness to it.
I can still recall the first time going down into Rapture and like not knowing what to expect from that game in general. Yeah.
All right, Joe, give us one more.
King Raven over on Twitter says, PS1 Clock Tower game. Clock Tower 2 in Japan. Holy crap, did that thing have my child brain thinking there was a crazy murderer everywhere.
I once watched 5 minutes of a Japanese horror movie. Never again.
I tell you
never
what.
Never in my entire life.
Asian horror movies are what ruined horror movies for me. The first time I watched Yuan, the original version of The Grudge.
Excuse me.
I legitimately, for someone who enjoyed horror movies before that, after that, I was like, no.
You're like, that's too far.
I'm good. I don't like being scared anymore.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to have to leave the discussion right there, but make sure you follow us on social media so that you can answer next week and every week's social media question. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Thanks for joining us for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a wide collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Brand management by Chad Callahan. And, of course, my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP Daily. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's A. Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.